Chapter 32. A go-to, and swore the Archbishop and I never walked to Boston, but there was never a day that Ponkapog wouldn't lie, so be it by the grace of God he got the opportunity. The Lord High Admiral came in, a hale gentleman close upon 70, and bronzed by the suns and storms of many climes and scarred with the wounds, got in many battles, and I told him how I had seen him sit in a high chair and eat fruit and cakes and answer to the name of Johnny. His granddaughter, the eldest, is but lately worn to the youngest of the Grand Dukes, and so who knows but a day may come when the blood of the Howells may reign in the land? I must not forget to say, while I think of it, that your new false teeth are done, my dear, and your wig. Keep your head well bundled with a shawl till the latter comes, and so cheat your persecuting neuralgias and rheumatisms. Would you believe it? The Duchess of Cambridge is deafer than you, deafer than her husband. They call her to breakfast with a salvo of artillery. And usually when it thunders she looks up expectantly, and says, Omen. Dot, the monument to the author of Loverson, and his silent partners is finished. It is the stateliest and the costliest ever erected to the memory of any man. This noble classic has now been translated into all the languages of the earth, and is adored by all nations and known to all creatures. Yet I have conversed as familiarly with the author of it as I do with my own great-grandchildren. I wish you could see old Cambridge and Ponkapog. I love them as dearly as ever, but privately, my dear, they are not much improvement on idiots. It is melancholy to hear them jabber over the same pointless anecdotes 3 and 4 times of an evening, forgetting that they had jabbered them over 3 or 4 times the evening before. Ponkapog still writes poetry, but the old-time fire has mostly gone out of it. Perhaps his best effort of late years is this. Soul, soul, soul of mine. Soul, soul, soul of thine. Thy soul, my soul, two souls entwine, and sing thy lauds in crystal wine. This he goes about repeating to everybody, daily and nightly, insomuch that he has become a sore affliction to all that know him. But I must desist. There are drafts here, everywhere, and my gout is something frightful. My left foot hath resemblance to a snuff bladder. God be with you. Hartford. These two Lady Hartford, in the earldom of Hartford, in the upper portion of the city of Dublin. One may imagine the joy of Howells, and the others in this ludicrous extravaganza, which could have been written by no one but Mark Twain. It will hardly take rank as prophecy, though certainly true forecast in it is not wholly lacking. Clemens was now pretty well satisfied with his piloting story, but he began to have doubts as to its title, Old Times on the Mississippi. It seemed to commit him to too large an undertaking. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. December 3, 1874. My dear Howells, let us change the heading to Islanding on the Miss in the Old Times, or to Teamboating on the M in Old Times, or to Personal Old Times on the Miss. We could change it for February, if now too late for January I suggest it, because the present heading is too pretentious, too broad and general. It seems to command me to deliver a second book of Revelation to the world, and cover all the old times the Mississippi. Dang that word, it is worse than Eber, Gypt, ever saw, whereas here I have finished article number 3, and am about to start on number 4. And yet I have spoken of nothing but of piloting as a science so far, and I doubt if I ever get beyond that portion of my subject. And I don't care to. Any muggins can write about old times on the Miss. Of 500 different kinds, but I am the only man alive that can scribble about the piloting of that day, and no man ever has tried to scribble about it yet. Its newness pleases me all the time, and it is about the only new subject I know of. If I were to write 50 articles, they would all be about pilots and piloting, therefore let's get the word piloting into the heading. There's a sort of freshness about that too. Is ever, Mark. But Howells thought the title satisfactory, and indeed it was the best that could have been selected for the series. He wrote every few days of his delight in the papers, and cautioned the author not to make an attempt to please any opposed Atlantic audience, adding, "Yarn it off into my sympathetic ear." Clemens replied to W.D. Howells in Boston, H'T'F'D, December 8, 1874. "My dear Howells, it isn't the Atlantic audience that distresses me, for it is the only audience that I sit down before in perfect serenity for the simple reason that it doesn't require a humorist to paint himself striped and stand on his head every 15 minutes. The trouble was that I was only bent on orking up an atmosphere, and that is to me a most fidgety and irksome thing sometimes. I avoid it, usually, but in this case it was absolutely necessary, else every reader would be applying the atmosphere of his own or sea experiences, and that shirt wouldn't fit, you know. I could have sent this article to a week ago, or more, but I couldn't bring myself to the drudgery of revising and correcting it. I have been at that tedious work 3 hours now, and by George, but I am glad it is over. Say I am as prompt as a clock, if I only know the day a thing is wanted, otherwise I am a natural procrastinaturalist. Tell me what day and date you want those 3 and 4, and I will tackle and revise them, and they'll be there to the minute. I could wind up with number 4. But there are some things more which I am powerfully moved to write. Which is natural enough, since I am a person who would quit authorizing in a minute to go to piloting, if the madam would stand it. I would rather sink a steamboat than eat, any time. My wife was afraid to write you, so I said with simplicity, I will give you the language and ideas. Through the infinite grace of God there has not been such another insurrection in the family before as followed this. However, the letter was written, and promptly, to whereas, heretofore he has remained afraid to do such things. With kind regards to Mrs. Howells, yours ever, Mark. The LD Times papers appeared each month in the Atlantic until July, 1875, and take rank today with Mark Twain's best work. When the first number appeared, John A. wrote, "It is perfect, no more nor less. I don't see how you do it." Which was reported to Howells, who said, "What business has hay, I should like to know, praising a favorite of mine? It's interfering." These were the days when the typewriter was new. Clemens and Twitchell, during their stay in Boston, had seen the marvel in operation, and Clemens had been unable to resist owning one. It was far from being the perfect machine of today. The letters were all capitals, and one was never quite certain, even of those. Mark Twain, however, began with enthusiasm and practiced faithfully. On the day of its arrival he wrote 2 letters that have survived, the first to his brother, the other to Howells. Typewritten letter to W.D. Howells, in Boston. Hartford, December 9, 1874. "My dear Howells, I want to add a short paragraph to article number 1, when the proof comes. Merely a line or two, however. I don't know whether I am going to make this typewriting machine go or no. That last word was intended for and not, but I guess I shall make some sort of a sucks of it before I run it very long. I am so thick-fingered that I miss the keys. You needn't a swear this. I am only practicing to get 3, another slip up there, only practice NNG to get the hang of the thing. I notice I miss fire and get in a good many unnecessary letters and punctuation marks. I am simply using you for a target to bang at. Blame my cats, but this thing requires genius in order to work it just right. Yours ever, M. Ark." Knowing Mark Twain, Howells wrote, "When you get tired of the machine, send it to me." Clemens naturally did get tired of the machine. It was ruining his morals, he said. He presently offered it to Howells, who by this time hesitated, but eventually yielded and accepted it. If he was blasted by its influence, the fact has not been recorded. One of the famous Atlantic dinners came along in December. "Aunt, you dare to refuse that invitation," wrote Howells. to meet Emerson, Eldridge, and all those boys at the Parker House, at 6 o'clock, Tuesday, December 15th. Come. Clemens had no desire to refuse. He sent word that he would come, and followed it with a characteristic line. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. Hartford, Sunday. My dear Howells, I want you to ask Mrs. Howells to let you stay all night at the Parker House, and tell lies, and have an improving time, and take breakfast with me in the morning. I will have a good room for you, and a fire. Can't you tell her it always makes you sick to go home late at night, or something like that? That sort of thing rouses Mrs. Clemens' sympathies, easily. The only trouble is to keep them up. Twitchell and I talked till 2 or 3 in the morning, the night we supped at your house, and it restored his health, on account of his being drooping for some time, and made him much more robuster than what he was before. Will Mrs. Howells let you? Yours ever, S50. C. Eldridge had issued that year a volume of poems, and he presented Clemens with a copy of it during this Boston visit. The letter of appreciation which follows contains also reference to an amusing incident, but we shall come to that presently. To T. B. Eldridge, in Ponkapog, Massachusetts, Farmington Avenue, Hartford. December 18, 1874. My dear Eldridge, I read The Cloth of Gold through, coming down in the cars, and it is just lightning poetry, a thing which it gravels me to say, because my own efforts in that line have remained so persistently unrecognized, in consequence of the envy and jealousy of this generation. Baby Bell always seemed perfection, before, but now that I have children it has got even beyond that. About the hour that I was reading it in the cars, Twitchell was reading it at home, and forthwith fell upon me with a burst of enthusiasm about it when I saw him. This was pleasant, because he has long been a lover of it. Those. Bailey Eldridge responded, etc., in one of the brightest speeches of the evening. That is what the Tribune correspondent says. And that is what everybody that heard it said. Therefore, you keep still. Don't ever be so unwise as to go on trying to unconvince those people. I've been skating around the place all day with some girls, with Mrs. Clemens in the window to do the applause. There would be a power of fun in skating if you could do it with somebody else's muscles. There are about 20 boys booming by the house now, and it is mighty good to look at. I'm keeping you in mind, you see, in the matter of photographs. I have a couple to enclose in this letter, and I want you to say you got them, and then I shall know I have been a good truthful child. I am going to send more as I ferret them out, about the place. And I won't forget that you are a upscriber. The wife and I unite in warm regards to you and Mrs. Eldridge. Yours ever, S50. Clemens. A letter bearing the same date as the above went back to Howells, we find, in reference to still another incident, which perhaps should come first. Mark Twain up to this time had worn the black string necktie of the West, a decoration which disturbed Mrs. Clemens, and invited remarks from his friends. He had persisted in it, however, up to the date of the Atlantic dinner, when Howells and Eldridge decided that something must be done about it. To W.D. Howells, in Boston. Hartford, December 18, 1874. My dear Howells, I left number 3, Miss Chapter, in my eldest's reach, and it may have gone to the postman, and it likewise may have gone into the fire. I confess to a dread that the latter is the case, and that stack of MS will have to be written over again. If so, oh for the return of the lamented Herod. You and Eldridge have made one woman deeply and sincerely grateful, Mrs. Clemens. For months, I may even say years, as he had shown unaccountable animosity toward my necktie, even getting up in the night to take it with the tongs, and blackguard it, sometimes also going so far as to threaten it. When I said you and Eldridge had given me 2 new neckties, and that they were in a paper in my overcoat pocket, she was in a fever of happiness until she found I was going to frame them, Then all the venom in her nature gathered itself together, insomuch that I, being near to a door, went without perceiving danger. Now I wear one of the new neckties, nothing being sacred in Mrs. Clemens' eyes, that can be perverted to a god, that shall make the person of her husband more alluring than it was aforetime. Joe Twitchell was the delightedest old boy I ever saw, when he read the words you had written in that book. He and I went to the concert of the Yale students last night, and had a good time. Mrs. Clemens dreads our going to New Orleans, but I tell her she'll have to give her consent this time. With kindest regards unto ye both. Yours ever, S. 50. Clemens. The reference to New Orleans at the end of this letter grew naturally out of the enthusiasm aroused by the Mississippi papers. The more Clemens wrote about the river, the more he wished to revisit it and take Howells with him. Howells was willing enough to go, and they eventually arranged to take their wives on the excursion. This seemed all very well and possible, so long as the time was set for some date in the future still unfixed. But Howells was a busy editor, and it was much more easy for him to promise good-naturedly. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.